Welcome back to the Hemingway List. I nearly said welcome back to A Year of War and Peace then. What a throwback. A whole year and 20 days since I've said that. Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We're talking about part 6, chapter 23. Anna can't have children? Is that what her doctor said? Swim said the mama fishy said he advised her not to have children more... Sorry, not to have more children because of her illness after giving birth to her daughter. This is an interesting chapter because Sophia's doctor also advised her not to have more children around the time Tolstoy was writing Anna Karenina. I think Sophia is Tolstoy's wife. Dolly is channeling Tolstoy's opinion about that. Poor Sophia did go on to have more children and even tried to abort her 12th pregnancy. The birth of Marya Lvovna Tolstaya was the cause of the first serious conflict between Tolstoy and Sophia. While breastfeeding one-year-old Lvovska, Tolstoy's wife realized she was pregnant again, which she was not pleased about. She was tired of giving birth and breastfeeding. She was tired of feeling like a breeding animal rather than a woman. She then suffered from childbed fever after Masha's premature birth, nearly dying. The doctors advised her against having any more children. But her husband was categorically opposed to this idea. He could not conceive of a married life without the birth of children, which nearly led to their divorce. And remember, poor Dolly's bleeding nipples that Tolstoy basically tosses out through Stiva in passing. Tolstoy insisted that Sophia breastfed their children, even though she suffered from painful, cracked bleeding nipples, because he thought it was natural. He was only dissuaded from when Sophia's father, a court physician, told him off and arranged for a wet nurse. In fact, Tolstoy even makes mention of Dolly Oblonskaya's bleeding nipples in Anna Karenina. Ouch, right? I can only imagine how painful that would be. I found this interesting fact. Divorce was quite rare in Russia at this juncture, but you could have never guessed it by observing the Tolstoy family. His wife Sonia saw both her older sister and her brother get divorced. When Tolstoy's sister Maria separated from her husband and had a child with a Swedish viscount, the novelist took great pains to secure a divorce, even getting permission from a bishop. But Maria decided to avoid any open scandal and remain at least nominally married. Soon her husband died, but by this time her lover had already abandoned her. This troubled relationship no doubt influenced the storyline and character development of Anna Karenina. I find this quote accurate. Tolstoy had the strange ability to write sensitively and accurately about the plight of women and combine it with a profound, if oblique, misogyny. Tolstoy was an acolyte of Rousseau. From Rousseau's Confessions, Tolstoy adapted the technique of self-involved self-examination and possibly of self-justification, whereby he expected his version of what he experienced to be the last word. In confessing, Rousseau has a characteristic way of admitting that he has done something reprehensible, such as letting a servant girl be blamed for the theft he committed, or abandoning his children, while making himself seem innocent and society or other individuals seem guilty for what he has done. I know some of us, maybe most of us, really like Levin and are rooting for Kitty and Levin. I can't. It's said that Tolstoy based Levin a lot on himself. I simply know too much about Tolstoy and he and how he was in real life to not be skeptical of Levin and Kitty's eventual happiness with him. I'm not the biggest Levin fan, I've got to say. Also, thank you, by the way, Swim said the Mama Fishy, for that very interesting comment. There's research in there, there's quotes, there's history of Tolstoy. Really, really well done on that that information. It's comments like yours and everyone's, but this kind of thing makes the subreddit so awesome, the community. So thank you for the time you put into that. Charolette said, very interesting info. It's really sad to hear all that about Tolstoy. I really can't understand wanting to divorce your wife for thinking 12 pregnancies isn't enough after the doctors have advised against more pregnancies. She had 4 more children, said Swim, said the Mama Fishy, after the doctors advised for no more due to Tolstoy's objection. We women are lucky to live in these modern times. Korsho said the doctor recommended some sort of contraception. Anna seems to imply that Vronsky won't know about it, and she is sure that she will have no children if she doesn't want to. However, it's not very realistic, as neither IUD nor pills were yet invented. Probably Tolstoy overestimated the effectiveness of known methods of contraception. Contraception used by the wife without the consent from the husband is a plot point that he also used in other works, War and Peace and Kreutzer Sonata. Really? Very interesting. I Am Norwegian said, I think my intuition was right. Dolly's introspective journey to Anna's residence is being undone along with the fantasy veneer of happiness. Dolly is from Moscow, right? If so, we're really seeing the Moscow-Petersburg divide. Dolly is more conservative and she's increasingly discovering that maybe her own life and values aren't so bad after all. Either way, she can't quite get herself to condone Anna and Vronsky's views and lifestyle. Charlotte said, I really felt for Anna's plight when she said, but imagine me living alone without him, alone, and that will happen. Everything shows that it will often happen, that he will spend half his time from home. She's given up her entire social life for Vronsky, and I think she didn't fully realize that it was the choice she was making until it was too late. That makes her far more emotionally dependent on him than is healthy, and he isn't in the same boat due to the double standards. She wants to let him live a normal life and be happy for him, but it's natural that she also wants him around. It sounds really rough. On the other hand, this quote referring to how her relation with Vronsky affected Kitty didn't inspire much sympathy, but it was not my fault, and whose fault was it? What does being in fault mean? Could things have been different? Yes. Yes, they could have been different. I blame Vronsky rather than Anna for how Kitty was affected, but Anna could certainly have made different choices. She needs to take some responsibility for her own actions. All right. Well, that's our conversation had. I don't know. Is anyone really like Team Anna? It's funny that she's the namesake of the book. I don't find any of these characters particularly relatable. I think I said that in yesterday's episode as well. So I do struggle to, I don't know, participate in some of these conversations. Let's move forward. Part 6, chapter 24 goes like this. Then there is all the more need to regularize your position if possible, said Dolly. Yes, if possible, said Anna, in what had suddenly become quite a different, a quiet and sad voice. Is a divorce not possible? I was told your husband had agreed. Dolly, I don't want to speak about it. Well, then we won't, Dolly hastened to say, noticing the look of pain on Anna's face. But I see that you look at things too, dismally. I? Not at all. I am very cheerful and satisfied. You saw the G. Fay P. de Passions, Veslovsky. Yes. To tell you the truth, I don't like Veslovsky's manner, said Dolly, wishing to change the subject. Oh, not at all. It tickles Alexis, and that's all. He is only a boy and entirely in my hands, you know. I manage him just as I please. He is just the same to me as your Grisha. Dolly, she said suddenly, changing her tone. You say I look at things too dismally? You cannot understand. It is too dreadful. I try not to look at them at all. But I think you ought to. You must do all that is possible. But what is possible? Nothing. You say I must marry Alexis and that I don't consider that. I not consider that? She repeated and flushed. She rose, drew herself up, sighed deeply, and with her light steps began pacing up and down the room, pausing occasionally. I not consider it? Not a day, not an hour passes without my thinking about it and blaming myself for what I think. Because these thoughts are enough to drive one mad. To drive one mad, she repeated. When I think of it, I cannot fall asleep with morphia. Well, all right, let us discuss it quietly. They speak of divorce. For one thing, he would not agree now. He is now under the Countess Lydia Ivanovna's influence. Dolly, sitting upright in her chair with a pained expression of sympathy, turned her head to allow Anna's movements. One must try, she said gently. Let's grant that, but what would it mean, said Anna, evidently expressing a thought she had considered 1,000 times and knew by heart. It means that I, who hate him, but yet acknowledge myself to blame toward him, and I do think him magnanimous, I must humiliate myself by writing to him. Well, supposing I make that effort and do it, I shall receive either an insulting answer or his consent. Supposing I get his consent, Anna at that instant had reached the other end of the room and stopped there, doing something to the window. I receive his consent, and my son and they will not give him to me. He will grow up despising me in the house of his father whom I have left. Understand that I love equally, I think, and both more than myself, two beings, Sertha and Alexis. She came back to the middle of the room and, pressing her chest with her arms, paused before Dolly in her white dressing gown. Her figure appeared peculiarly tall and broad. She bent her head and, trembling all over with emotion, looked from under her brows with moist, glittering eyes at the thin, piteous-looking little Dolly in her patched dressing jacket and nightcap. I love those two beings only, and the one excludes the other. I cannot unite them. Yet that is the one thing I desire, and if I can't have that, nothing matters. Nothing, nothing. It will end somehow, therefore I can't. I don't like speaking about it. So don't reproach me, don't condemn me for anything. You, in your purity, cannot understand all I suffer. She came and sat down beside Dolly, peering into her face with a guilty look, and took her by the hand. What are you thinking? What are you thinking of me? Don't despise me. I don't deserve contempt. I am simply unhappy. If anyone is unhappy, it is I, she murmured, and turning away, she wept. Left alone, Dolly said her prayers and got into bed. She had pitied Anna from the bottom of her heart while they were talking, but now she could not make herself think about her. Recollections of home and of her children rose in her imagination with a new and peculiar charm. That world of her own now seemed so precious and dear that she did not wish on any account to spend another day away from it, and she decided certainly to go home and on the morrow. Meanwhile, Anna, returning to her boudoir, took a wine glass and put into it some drops of medicine, the chief ingredient of which was morphia. Having drunk it and sat still for a few moments, she entered her bedroom cheerfully and merrily. When she came in, Vronsky regarded her attentively. He tried to find some trace of the conversation which he knew by her having remained so long in Dolly's room must have taken place. But in her expression of restrained excitement which concealed something, he detected nothing except that beauty which, though familiar, still captivated him, her consciousness of this and her desire that it should not act on him. He did not wish to ask her what they had been talking about, but hoped that she would tell him of her own accord. However, she only said, "I am glad you like Dolly, you do. But I have known her for a long time. I think she is very kind, may excessive terror, excessively matter of fact. But all the same, I was very glad she came." He took Anna's hand and looked inquiringly into her eyes. She, misunderstanding that look, smiled at him. Next morning, in spite of her host's entreaties, Dolly prepared to go home. Levin's coachman, in his by no means new coat and a hat, something like a postboy's, with his horses that did not match, and the old caliche with mended mudguards, drove up gloomily but resolutely to the covered sand-strewn portico. Taking leave of the Princess Barbara and of the men was unpleasant to Dolly. After spending a day together, both she and her host felt distinctly that they did not suit one another, and that it was better for them not to associate. Only Anna felt sad. She knew that when Dolly was gone, no one would call up in her soul the feelings which had been aroused by their meeting. To have those feelings awakened was painful, but still, she knew that they were the best part of her soul, and that that part of her was rapidly being choked by the life she was leading. When they had driven into the fields, Dolly experienced a pleasant feeling of relief, and she was about to ask the men how they had liked the Vronskys' place, when suddenly Philip, the coachman himself, remarked, "They are rich, that they are, but yet they gave us only 2 bushels of oats. The horses had eaten every grain before cock-crow. What's 2 bushels? Only a bite. Nowadays oats are 45 kopecks at the inns. When anyone comes to our place, no fear, we give their horses as much as they'll eat." "A stingy gentleman," confirmed the clerk. "Well, and did you like their horses?" asked Dolly. "The horses? Fine's the only word for them. And the food is good too, but it did seem so dull to me, Darya Alexandrovna. I don't know how you found it," he added, turning his handsome, kindly face toward her. "I felt the same. Shall we get back by evening?" "We ought to." On returning home and finding everyone safe and extremely nice, Dolly gave a very animated account of her visit, of how well she had been received, of the luxury and good taste at the Vronskys, and of their amusements, and would not let anyone say a word against them. "One must know Anna and Vronsky. I have got to know him better now, in order to understand how kind and pathetic they are," said she with entire sincerity, forgetting the indefinite feelings of dissatisfaction and embarrassment she had experienced there. Alrighty, there we go, another chapter done. Have your say about that chapter over on the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.